It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 31st episode of Wayne's Comics. Thanks for listening. This week I have a special interview with Matt Malero, who does Nobodies for Kickstart Comics, which is a great comic company. He's also pretty well known for Aqua Teen Hunger Force, among other things, on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. Then I'll review this week's comics, followed by an extended news and previews. The previews came out from Diamond Comics. That usually has a lot of good things to talk about, so we do have some discussion about those kinds of things. And finally, I'll go and check out the local comic store and tell you what might be in your shop this week. But since we have a lot to get to, let's get started. Before we get to my interview with Matt Malero, I want to give some people's names. Samantha Olson is the person at Kickstart, and she's one of the people I've been interacting with as well. I think she's doing a great job with the company. The second person is Jesus Redondo Roman. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He's the artist on Nobodies.
I'm talking to Matt Malero of Nobodies from Kickstart Comics, one of my favorite companies. And how are you doing today, Matt?
Wayne, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, great. It's good to talk with you. Now, what's interesting, you and I were talking just a little bit ago about this, is that unlike many comics people that I've interviewed, you didn't grow up reading comics. This is kind of an acquired taste for you later on. I'm fascinated. You're more of a TV person than a comics person, apparently.
Yeah. My background right now, I do mostly television animation. I didn't grow up reading comics. I liked fantastical worlds and superheroes. I just didn't get into them. Nobody around me was doing it, and I just didn't find them, I guess. You know, I remember reading Richie Rich as a kid, mm-hmm. thinking that was fun and outrageous and more of a sense of humor, but that was it. Yeah, I just never got into them just because I wasn't exposed to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. So if that was the case, how did you get into writing Nobody's? It starts with a K, that silent K. How did you get to write that book for Kickstarter?
Well, I had written the idea down maybe 7 years ago, and I was going to form it and pitch it as a movie, mm-hmm. and I just never actually got around to it. And then a friend of mine had picked it up. I showed it to a friend of mine, and she knew Samantha over at Kickstart and shot it her way. And next thing I know, Samantha's calling saying, this would make a great graphic novel. And I said, cool, let's do it. So it was nice to get one of your brainchild projects into some media. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this would be a fun experience. I've never done a comic, so.
Cool. Now, your background is in animation on television, as you were saying. You're well known for the things on Adult Swim on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Mm-hmm. That's been on the air now for 12 years. Co-created that and co-write it with my buddy down in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Started with Space Ghost Coast to Coast back in 93.
Wow.
And it was like three people who we didn't know what we were doing. We were just trying to make something crazy, and mm-hmm. it kind of developed a cult following. And then, you know, Adult Swim kind of happened mm-hmm. around maybe 91, 92. Mm-hmm. No, 95. So it kind of helped hit the cornerstone for that. Mm-hmm. It's just a fun lab of, if you can think of it and it makes you laugh, they let you go try it.
Oh, great. You also do Squidbillies.
I helped set up Squidbillies. Mm-hmm. Pete Smith and I wrote the first pilot. That was a hard show to get going because mm-hmm. nobody quite knew what they wanted it to be or how long they wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. It had writers come in and out, and then, you know, I decided that I just wanted to focus on Aqua Teen. Mm-hmm. So, Squidbillies is a good show.
Well, I'm just curious as to where you get the ideas for these things. I mean, you know, Aqua Teen Hunger Force is a collection of interesting and unusual characters. Where do these ideas come from?
We get asked that question a lot, and mm-hmm. and often we just say we steal them from the internet. it's just how we think. You know, we think of the craziest things. We try to set a little bit of organic, you know, identifiableness into them. And where do they come from? I don't know. If I were up in the counter, people would say, how can you do that math so fast? But, you know, it's just what I do. It's what I've been doing forever. Mm-hmm. And luckily, it's working.
The nice thing is you get paid for it. That's the great part.
yeah, I'm able to survive. So
yeah. Now it says on here, I'm looking at, speaking of the internet, I was just looking and it says that your voice is often digitally altered when you're playing a character. Was that on purpose? I mean, did you decide to do that?
It's for two reasons. It's on purpose and it's to save money because we don't have a lot of money to make Aqua Teen. So when we write in a new character, back in the old days of Aqua Teen, we couldn't afford to hire a guest star. So I would just go in there and yell stuff into the microphone and then we'd pitch it up or down to make it work for that character. They didn't have to pay me. I was already getting paid to be there. So, and Ur is one of the more popular characters that I do. But I don't do any of the main characters. I just do, you know, recurring guest stars like Ur, Cybernetic Ghost, that kind of thing.
Cool. As we were talking about, you're doing Nobodies for Kickstarter. Do you want to explain a little bit of what the concept is?
Yeah, it's about this family. And it's this mom and dad that work for a secret agency called Practice because they have special sensory abilities. And they run around America keeping the supernatural ghost world, urban legend world in check. So they're kind of like the policemen. Mm-hmm. They're probably one of 10 families in the whole country that do this. And it's a big secret. The kids don't even know what they do. They're not allowed to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so in the book, they're just kind of doing their thing and they get, and they're, well, see, how do I go into this? A bunch of toys come to life. No, I'm just kidding. The big moral global thing here is that the parents are kind of, they're so into their jobs that they kind of lose sight of what's really important, which is their family. And they're getting set up on this giant mission that might alter the undead supernatural world breaking into the living world. Mm-hmm. And it's a big, huge deal for them. They've got to like balance that, you know, we just figured out we just need to be like living with our family and focusing more on our kids. But this giant case is being presented to us and it has to do with people we work with. And so there's a lot of fun twists and surprises mm-hmm. as they go through this last case, but it all works out for them in the end. And it's a really fun sort of PG-13 family action adventure.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And who's doing the art for the comic?
This guy named Jesus, and he lives in Spain. Mm-hmm. And I never got to meet him or even talk to him. I went through Kickstarter to do it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'd never done comics, so they started recommending artists to me, sending me blog pages, and I sparked to his work, and so did they. I don't think he even speaks English. I think he had to have a translator do the script for him.
Wow.
And apparently his neighbor inked it, but he has a really great style. It's almost like a timeless style, you know. Mm-hmm. It could live on. It's not like we're referencing super pop culture. Or it's like Warner Brothers cartoons. Mm-hmm. It's just legendary and will live on.
Mm-hmm. Do we know a release date yet?
Halloween of this year. Okay. I don't know the exact date.
So it's around then.
Yeah.
That'll be good because it's a good time of the year. In the winter, it's just like television. Comics seem to sell better in the winter because people have time on their hands and they really can't go outside. So that's a good time of the year to put that out.
Yeah. And also it's supernatural, kind of scary world and Halloween kind of makes sense.
Yeah, that's great. Now that you've put your toe in the water, are you interested in doing more comics?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to do another graphic novel. I think I have some ideas that might be suitable for that. I think we're just going to wait and see how the response is with this book and the way I tell a story. And then from there, I'm sure I'll get calls from every publisher in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the comics industry right now is at a turning point, you know, with digital comics and things like that. Have you, not that you were in the process of writing, did you look at any other comics or did you, just sort of figured this is the way I'm going to do it and it's better that I just go in and do things my way rather than trying to adapt to other people's styles?
You know, I actually went out and made the effort to buy some graphic novels, some that had been turned into movies and some I just picked on a whim. And I never even opened them. I have like seven of them still with the plastic wrap on them. And it's not because I didn't want to read them. I just thought, you know, I'm just going to do this like I do everything else. I don't want to try to emulate somebody else's way of doing it or be influenced by somebody else's book. So, and in fact, I wrote the whole first script wrong. I wrote it as a screenplay, so it's in screenplay form, and I just assumed they, meaning Kickstarter, would just break it apart and turn it into the right panels. And Samantha wrote back and said, "No, wait, no. this is not how we do this. You can have six panels, so many words per page, and then this is a whole another way of writing. It's just like writing a document, basically, while you're trying to still maintain the story." So, yeah, it was all new to me. It was mind-numbingly new.
I'm sure it was a challenge because you're used to thinking on the television screen. In comics, you've got defined pages in which you have to work. So that must have been something of a change for you.
Oh, it was. I mean, you had to go back through the script and the notes and think, okay, I need to tell all this information basically in one page if I can, or, you know, two pages. I guess you don't want to drag out stuff too long. And it's just like, you know, choosing the most important part of it and what should they really say, you know, here. And Samantha even told me, she's like, you know, the dialogue in these things can be a little stilted because you just don't have a lot of time and room. So it was a big challenge. But I think I nailed it pretty good. Just like in the television stuff I do, there's always the challenge of we don't have enough money to really afford to do some crazy effect, so we just kind of cheat it and figure out the best way to do it. And so I was used to that kind of challenge.
Cool, because I'm looking forward to it. One of the things I like about Kickstart is that they put out self-contained stories. Most comics today are unending storylines. Story might happen, but there's overarching things going on. And so it's to keep you coming back as a habit to keep buying them. And I like Kickstart because when you read the stories, you don't know whether or not the characters are all going to survive by the end, because you most often don't have a second comic to come out with that. So it's wide open for you to do. And I like that a lot about it.
Yeah, I do too. There's definitely closure in this book, but there's also definitely room to expand it if you wanted to. But we do have a good ending, and it ends, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
And see how America responds.
Okay, that'll be good. Now, what other projects are you working on that we should know about?
We're still making Aqua Teen.
Mm-hmm.
I've been running around Hollywood pitching the Mad Libs movie.
Oh.
And hopefully we'll get that going. And I have a pilot with Disney XD.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be fun, animated, tween age pilot, rock and roll, kids on guitars, flying around.
Mm-hmm.
And most of that cooking. I'm sure I have like 10 things going. Just have to keep everything up in the air, hoping a few of them will stick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you're keeping busy with those good things. So, well, it's been good to talk with you, Matt, and I'm looking forward to reading the book. It should be out by the end of this month, so we're looking forward to Nobody's with the silent K, the Don't Look Under the N. So it sounds like a great story. It sounds like something that pretty much anybody in the family could read.
Yeah, I think so. I have a 5- and a 3-year-old, and there's a little bit of graphic art in there, but it's all in sort of tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I would recommend it to all in the family.
Okay. Okay, Matt, it's been good talking with you, and much success.
Thank you very much, Wayne. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
If you're looking for serious science fiction, well, we can't really help you. But if you're looking for science fiction with fun, join us at sfp-now.com.
If you absolutely insist on using erotic persuasion to achieve your devious ends, then so be it.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
Take a look at the books that came out this week. My favorite book that came out was Red Spike number 5 of 5, which is Captain America done right in my estimation. This is the end of the first storyline, and I hope we get to see many more of them because I liked it really well. Jeff Kahn, who I interviewed a few weeks back on this podcast, has a lot of interesting things to say that give me a lot of food for thought regarding government and politics and things like that. It's a big surprise ending that I really liked as well. Can't spoil it here, so be sure to get the book. If you can't get back issues, wait for the trade and be sure to buy that because it's definitely worth the read. Another one I really like was Moriarty number 5. I got a chance to read the trade paperback not long ago, and boy, is it ever good. It's an interesting look at the Professor Moriarty character, and from his perspective instead of from Sherlock Holmes's. We're going into the second storyline, and it's very, very dark and very interesting. I would highly recommend it. In fact, in one of the next SFP Now podcasts, we should have Daniel Corey on there, one of the folks behind this comic. So I'm looking forward to that. Other books that came out that were good that aren't DC are Stan Lee Traveler number 11 from Boom, Superior number 5 of 6 from Marvel, Mighty Samson number 4, and Turok Son of Stone number 4 from Dark Horse, which I believe are the last of the Jim Shooter books that are coming out from there. There's also Marksman number 3, which is a great miniseries, Severed number 3 from Scott Snyder, and Walking Dead from Robert Kirkman continues to percolate along quite nicely from Image. So let's get to the new 52 reviews for this week. This is the first week of the second month of DC's New 52, and it's an interesting one. Detective Comics follows on what happens in the first issue when we discover the Joker's skin, the skin from his face hanging on a wall. Ooh, that was still my favorite of the week. Action number 2 continues to percolate quite nicely. I really like the conflict between Superman and Luthor, which is the first time that takes place in the new continuity. Justice League International number 2 was really good. That's a very strong action team book, and I like that a lot. Next, I enjoyed Men of War, as the stories really ratcheted up my interest a lot this time. Then I enjoyed Batwing, which surprised me by not taking the easy way out on any of the story that was done in issue number 1. And Old Man 2 really moved up in my estimation from number 1. That really is interesting. We're discovering that Buddy's daughter has powers that he never dreamed that she would get, and she's apparently more in tune with what's going on than he is, and that's interesting. I like that. There were two number ones that came out this week from DC. Penguin, Pain and Prejudice was very creepy and unsettling, so I liked that one a lot. On the other hand, Huntress had a lot more of a feel of a TV adventure show to it and a lot of daring do, so I liked that book. Hawk and Dove continues to perform better than I ever expected it would, and I had somewhat high expectations for it. Not a lot of other people did. I liked the introduction of the Avatars. That's why I think one of the things that's making this book so much fun to read. Swamp Thing by Scott Snyder is great. I think it's just going along really well. I'm looking forward to the Animal Man Swamp Thing crossover coming. Then we have Stormwatch, and I like the Martian Manhunter's use in the book, as well as the other characters. Paul Cornell's doing a really good job with that. Green Arrow is still one that I like, and I'm sorry that Mr. Krall is leaving the book after a couple more issues, and I know other people didn't like it as much as I did, but I liked it a lot. Red Lanterns wasn't quite as gripping as the first issue, but it still wasn't bad. Static Shock was very good, but I remain uncertain about OMAC, and we're going to learn a little bit more about OMAC in the upcoming news and previews segment, so be sure to stay tuned. And those are the books that came out this week. It's time for this week's news and previews in comics. And with me, of course, as always, is Gianluca and Ian. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing well.
That's Gianluca Glazer, well, of course. And Ian Cullen, how are you, Ian?
Well, I'm fine, Wayne. How are you, darling?
Okay. He's had too much to drink, obviously, so we have to understand these sorts
of things. Yeah, coffee.
Let me start with the Newsarama article that I emailed you guys about how – sure. And you can tie into this too, Gianluca. You've got some information about it as well. Newsarama posted month of September final numbers coming in, and I was very intrigued by some of the numbers. I guess I should let you go ahead and talk about what interested you, and then I'll follow up. What struck you on the numbers for September?
You had a significant lead in DC in terms of like units with 43% to DC with 43% to Marvel's 37.88%. The dollars wasn't that much of a difference. DC was ahead just by like a fraction of percent, 35.74% to Marvel's 35.37%. Mm-hmm. But there's been like certain factors, I guess. Returnability apparently drops like some of these numbers by 10%. So it is kind of interesting. But yeah, DC took the lead this week, and you know, I have some details if you want to hear about it in comparisons to previous months and stuff.
Well, let me give you some of the details that I saw on Newsarama. Sure. Is that DC counted for 17 of the top 20 comics, 19 of the top 25, 32 of the top 50 in the month of September. And the last time I think they were in first place was back literally three years ago, October 2007. And so it's been a little while for DC. So I'm just really fascinated by it. Any other statistics we should mention?
Let's see. In comparison, like overall, comics were up 9.95% in terms of dollars and 13.10% in units compared to last month. Mm-hmm. So comics were up in September as opposed to August. However, graphic novels took a big plunge from August to September. They dropped 13.92%. That's pretty significant in dollars. Mm-hmm. And in units, they dropped 12.64%. Comparisons to last year in September, comics were up 8.37% in dollars and 14.42% units. And graphic novels were very, very much down from last year, 18.44% in dollars and 23.50% in units. So it seems like this particular month in September retailers spent a lot of money on comic books and periodicals in terms of serial comics, but not a lot of money in terms of like trades or one-shot graphic novels. But DC might have taken a lot of their expenditures that they normally have spent on like actual graphic novels.
Well, I've got to say, there is a graphic novel coming out pretty soon, and it's previewed in the back of most of the DC comics that I've gotten this you know thus far. Mm-hmm. Batman Noel.
Yeah.
Quite like the book of that.
Yeah, that's the guy who did a book called The Joker a year or two back. I don't have the book in front of me, so I can't tell you the name of the gentleman. I don't know if Ian can find that, but it was an interesting book. He's got a very spooky kind of style, and it's kind of a twisted holiday story, so it's kind of interesting. But I want to get back to the New 52 for a minute, because there's a couple other things I think we really ought to mention, is that I spoke last week on last week's podcast to Pete Casaza from Big Planet Comics, and he said exactly what these statistics came out with, was that trades were down, a lot of the individual comics were up, sales were up, yeah, and all these kind of things he said exactly last week. So I want to thank him for that, for giving us a little heads up on that. The thing that fascinated me the most was, of course, you know, I'm a Batman fan. What was the number one comic of the month?
Batman number one.
Mr. Scott Snyder, who was also on a recent podcast. So I was very happy when I saw that. Justice League, of course, doesn't count in these figures because it didn't come out during September. It came out during August. Action was number two. Green Lantern was number three. Flash was four. Superman was number five. Then Detective, Batman the Dark Knight. Then we get the first Marvel, Fear Itself, at number eight. Then we get another Marvel, Ultimate Comics. That's right. Then we get another Batman comic, Batman and Robin at 10. Yeah. Green Lantern and the New Guardians, Batgirl, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern Corps, the Teen Titans, which a lot of people poo-pooed that book, so I was happy to see it did well. Interestingly enough, Aquaman number one by Jeff Johns was down at number 16. I found that interesting. 17 was Batwoman. Then we get to another Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man, Red Lanterns, Justice League Dark is number 20, and then just because it's a Batman comic, number 21 was Nightwing, which I found really interesting. So you got a lot of Batman comics in that top 20. So I was really fascinated by that. I think DC's got to be very happy with how these turned out.
Yeah, there's hardly any Marvel comics in the top 20 as well. That's intriguing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, only two in the top 10.
I know, that's disgraceful.
I was going to say, we don't know what the sales numbers are so far. We just know rankings and comparisons to sales. So I'm kind of curious to see when the full 300 list ICV2 will put out along with the sales figures. Mm-hmm. So apparently didn't they say there were like three books that sold over 200,000?
Yes.
So I have to assume Batman, Action Comics, and Green Lantern were those three.
Well, you have to also include, I guess it was August, but Justice League did over 300,000. So we've got that one. I don't know how, you know, it'll be better when we get everything all in one month again, when Justice League is included with these things. I'll be curious to see how those numbers pan out in the second month. And of course, the book that you don't particularly care for, Legendary Comics Holy Terror number one, John Luca, came in as the top graphic novel of the month, which I found funny. Just because something is bad doesn't mean it's not going to sell well.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing, okay, guys. Here's the deal. These are direct market sales numbers. These are sales numbers from the comic book stores, not Barnes & Nobles, not all these mass marketplaces. These are numbers that were pretty much determined at the end of July. And back in July, guys, I was hyping this book too, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. I was very interested. It's written and illustrated by Frank Miller, never been released. And I have a lot of respect for stuff that is considered a labor of love in terms of finally coming out. So props to Legendary Comics. This is their very first book, the very first release, and it's the number one. Even though numbers may be down for graphic novels, it's still their claim, September's number one selling graphic novel. Now that that's done, a lot of people don't really think Legendary when they bought this book. Legendary Comics really needs to kind of follow up with like something of their own, you know, and something that it hopefully is going to be a little more critically receptive.
Mm-hmm. To go the other direction on the New 52, the lowest selling of the New 52 was Olmec, number one. Above that was Men of War, number one. And then we got the Static Shock, and then we got the Blackhawks, and then it was Voodoo, and then it was Grifter. And then Mr. Terrific was above that. So you can see what are the lower tier books at this point. But as far as the New 52 go, I'm surprised because Demon Knights did better than I thought it would. I thought Frankenstein Agent of Shade did pretty well also. So there was a a lot of interesting surprises. Now, the question is, going from month to month, see, we've got a real clear indication of how the first month went. We can compare these as we go along month to month to see how the new 52 is holding up. But yeah. Huntress came out this week, and Penguin Pain and Prejudice, which is really cool, came out this week. So there's a lot of new books to keep people going back to the stores. I'm going to be interested at the end of this month. I'm going to go back to some of my friends who run stores and ask them, are you still seeing the same turnout for number twos as you were for number ones, which I think is a big going to be a real concern for them.
Yeah, I don't think that's possible.
It can't possibly be that high, but you know, hey, if it's above what they had last October, then they're benefiting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, why don't we ask Ian? Ian, have you got any news that you want to share?
Actually, yeah. This is basically UK news. It might wind up in America, but I think initially they're aiming at the UK market. There's a new magazine. It's actually in the same vein as Clint in a lot of ways, only it's sort of like probably a bit more universal, you know, as in aimed at kids of all ages. there's a new magazine coming out on October 20th. Called Strip Magazine.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not about pole. It's not about pole dancers.
Oh.
It's basically an anthology magazine, and you know it's got comic strips in it, such as Hot Jaw, Death from Below, plus War Paint, Age of Heroes. It comes out on October the 20th, and the number for you to order it, if you want to order code from your comic store, I don't know how many people are getting it in now, is JUL117915. Mm-hmm. That's sort of like the previews code for issue one, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. comes out 20th of October. Mm-hmm. It's got all sorts of different comic strips in it. Let's see if we can find a little bit of blurb here. Here we go. Strip Magazine Issue 1 is a 68-page issue featuring comics by PJ Holden, John McRae, Phil Hester, James Hudnell, John Ridgway, John Rushby, Jonathan Keith Page, Stephen Walsh, and others, including a representation of a classic action strip, Hookjaw. It comes with a pull-out war paint mini poster by John McRae and a dazzling giant poster promoting Marabellus, one of the ongoing graphic album series.
Oh.
But, you know, that's interesting. Reading down that list of writers there, Phil Hester.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, excellent.
No, that was the only one that I like recognized from the list.
I think all the others are British.
Yeah.
Yes. Or thereabout. This is actually edited by John Freeman, who's a contributor at Sci-Fi Pulse.
Great.
.net. And he also used to edit Star Trek magazine. He used to be the editor for Marvel UK as well.
Cool.
Some time back. So he's done a lot, and he's been putting this together for quite a while. So it comes out on the 20th of October. So if you're one of our UK listeners and you're looking for something new, you know, go down your local comic stores. It's only been sold to comic stores at the moment. It's not going to be mainstream, only available in comic stores. Ask them for Strip Magazine, and if they don't have it, you know, so like, shoot them.
Well, let me ask you something. If somebody from the U.S. wants to get a hold of one of these, how would you recommend that they do it?
I guess this retailer could order through the Diamond order code.
The order code is JUL117915. Yeah. So
that's a Diamond code, all right.
So if you go with that, you could probably get it through that.
Cool. Any other news there, Ian?
That's the only thing that sprang to mind, because the only reason I brought this up is because I was actually speaking to John earlier in the week. With regards to the difficulties we were having on the website, and I asked him when it was coming out, and he said it's coming out this month, so I thought I'd better give it a bit more of a plug.
Cool. All right, Gianluca, how about you? We talked a little bit about the DC numbers. Anything else you want to talk about that, or do you have other news that you want to share?
Oh, there's like a lot of other news, but in relation to DC, interesting enough, we mentioned on last week's show about DC and the Amazon's Kindle Fire. Well, there were some repercussions for that. You know, DC not only offered Watchmen, but they also offered 100 of their titles at a special discounted rate only for Amazon for the Kindle Fire. And Barnes & Noble's were obviously ticked off and have pulled all their books, all those 100 DC titles off of their shelves.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. You guys hadn't heard about that. You can definitely check it out. But it's big. People have actual pictures of Barnes & Noble's employees taking down the books from the display stands. Yeah, it's a big deal. And DC promised, I think it was for four weeks? To do this kind of promotion with Amazon. So there's no backing out of that, but it's kind of interesting to see, you know, these kind of promotions, it sounds good, but you have to take into account, like, you know, your other suppliers, your other retailers and stuff, you know, and make sure you're not going to tick them off. And digital comics is a very touchy subject right now.
Yeah.
it's very easy to tick off comic book retailers. Take something a little special to tick off a national chain like Barnes & Noble's. but they did it. That was big news. In other industry news, happy for him, but kind of sad in a way. This was reported by Heidi McDonald at The Beat. But Chip Mosier has left Boom Studios for a new unannounced position elsewhere. Mosier was director of marketing and sales for Boom for 4 years. Actually, close to five. But. Wow. I won't correct that, where he was a popular figure. Mosher's job as sender out of press releases at Boom has been taken on by marketing coordinator Emily McGinnis. So congratulations to both of them. One's, I guess, moving up, and one is moving on to hopefully better things. Chip's legacy at Boom is really good. He's the one who did the whole Mark Waid is evil campaign. For Irredeemable and Incorruptible. And those have been like some of Boom's best-selling books, these ongoing series by Mark Waid. He was responsible for promoting the Disney Pixar license, which I think he did an excellent job of. It was a huge announcement, I remember, at San Diego 2009, I believe, or maybe 2008. But that was a huge deal. He's done other great promotional work for other titles as well, and he continued to do so. So it's got to be a big blow, I guess, to Boom. But hopefully, you know, they have some people in place, you know, to jump in, take on.
Let's hope so.
You know my thumb, bro.
I'm liking Boom just simply because they released Planet of the Apes. I know that you've done them for Hellraiser.
Yeah, and they did a great promotion and tying in with the movie by offering $1 for the new story arc in issue 5, offering a very low price trade paperback all in the same month, and promoting that in advance. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I also like Dynamite. I'm getting into Dynamite stuff now as well. I put in a pre-order for Dynamite's version of Flash Gordon.
Oh, cool.
I'm still going to keep getting the Arden Comics one because I really like that one as well. But I like the look of the Dynamite one because it looks like it's harking back a little bit more to the classic series sort of thing. And, you know,
Zeitgeist.
Yeah, and I like that visual look better.
It's kind of interesting. They don't say Flash Gordon, do they, in the book? Or does it say Flash Gordon?
Yeah, I think it is Flash Gordon. I think they're calling it.
Okay, because they kind of get around names sometimes. You know, they say Warlord of Mars. They don't say John Carter of Mars, you know? Marvel was able to do that with their book. They have Tarzan. They don't call him Tarzan. He's the Lord of the Jungle.
Yeah, I'm going to order that. I'm going to give that a look.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting. So.
But my comic bill is actually going to go up.
Oh. Well, guys, I want to go through really quick, though, the new previews that came out.
Okay.
Next week, hopefully, guys, I'll be talking to you about the full 300 set of comics and graphic novels for September with sales numbers. Mm-hmm. But until then, this will have to do. So in previews, some interesting titles that struck out at me. The Strain number 1 by Dark Horse. It's Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan. They've done prose books together, but they are the creator of this new comic book. It's going to be an 11-issue miniseries, and it's called The Strain. First issue is only $1. Interesting. The comic book is being written by David Lapham, who seems to be getting to a habit of writing comic books that are being created.
As long as they're good ones, that's fine with me.
Yeah. I have a feeling The Strain is going to be the one to beat the vault. I know the other previous David Lapham book didn't, but something tells me that the numbers for The Strain number 1 are going to be very big. So, Mike Huddleston is doing that. Now, note, I'm telling you guys it's $1 first issue because there's going to be kind of a pattern here going on here. So, other thing that stuck out was The Ray, Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. It's a new series for DC. It's, I think it's like the only number one that I noticed in their regular line of comics.
Yeah.
But it's a new superhero story. Kind of sounds Spider-Man-ish, you know, except for being bitten by a spider. He's hit by some Ray. And it talks about the end about, like, keeping his girlfriend happy, you know? Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what that's like. Mm-hmm. Over on IDW, they had a couple of interesting-looking books. Chris Robertson has, like, a new story that he's doing called Memorial. Mm-hmm. Interesting about a young lady who, I guess, has memory problems about her past, ends up inheriting a magic shop. Sounds interesting. And then in the latest of their artist edition books, they did Walter Simonson's Tarzan, and they did, what's his name's, EC Weird Science books, Wally Woods. So the new one is John Romita's The Amazing Spider-Man artist edition. So it's collecting select issues of John Romita's work in Amazing Spider-Man, huge oversized format, original storyboards, everything. So it's really cool. They don't give you a price. They put in quotes, please inquire. which I've never seen before in previews. Previous artist edition books go for $125, so I'm kind of wondering why they just didn't say that.
Well, you know what please inquire means? It means you can't afford it.
Yeah.
You have to ask, you can't afford it.
Right. Boom Studios has a new series out. It's called Outcast. It's kind of like a Conan the Barbarian as a zombie kind of story. Very interesting. It's being written by Michael Allen Nelson. First issue is just $1. Interesting. It comes with 4 covers. Now, this is something like in Dynamite territory here that Boom is doing. So they're releasing this book. They're doing 4 covers. They're doing 3 regular incentive covers for every 25, 50, and 75 copies you order. And then they have the Joe Jusco 1 in 200 variant incentive. And it's CGC'd at 9.8, meaning CGC is a grading company. You send a comic book in, and it's from a scale from, you know, up to 10 being perfect. 9.8 is near perfect. You very rarely see a 9.9 or a 10 because it's graded on everything in terms of, like, the quality of the paper. If there's, like, any tiny scratch or any kind of thing, you know, that kind of brings down the value.
Mm-hmm.
So they're promising you a 9.8 already sealed in the CGC box cover by Joe Jusco.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting.
Cool.
There. 1821 steps its hat into the comic book industry. I have a little history of 1821. I gave them some good advice a year ago, did some analysis and stuff, and did a little bit of promotions. And then there are going to be a New York Comic Con with this particular book I'm about to talk about, and I sent out a press release about it. So it's very interesting. It is 1821 has coming out Romeo and Juliet, The War. And all these books I'm talking about are coming out in December, just so you didn't know. It's Romeo and Juliet's The War. It's created by Stan Lee and Terry Dugas. So naturally, you know, that draws a lot of attention. Well, the Stan Lee part draws a lot of attention. It's written by a guy named Max Work. He had also done a book for 1821 previously called Barbarians. And then the art is by a guy named Skan Shorzon. Sorry, I may be butchering his last name, but he's Singaporean. He's originally from Imaginary Friend Studios. This guy is an amazing artist. And if you look at the spread page, ad page that they have in the previews, you know, you get just a glimpse of the stuff this guy does. But Skan is very amazing. He worked for Imaginary Friend Studios. And then later on, he worked for a small company called Stormline that did not last. It was another Singapore-based company. They released like an art book and 1 comic before they closed up. But they were going to release a Best of Skan kind of art book, which never came to light. So very interesting book to check out. I'm not sure if this is going to be a full graphic novel with panels and word balloons, or whether it's going to be one of those hybrid mixtures, you know, that's going to have like illustrations and prose. So that's not made abundantly clear. So, but it's a nice, interesting company. And then 1821 is, it's an offshoot of 1821 Pictures. And they produced the movie The Box with Cameron Diaz, based off of the Twilight Zone episode by Richard Matheson. Yeah, it was him. And then, yeah, they did some other movie too.
Okay.
Moving along. This is really interesting. Fantagraphics has a book coming out in December called Flannery O'Connor, The Cartoon. Now, Flannery O'Connor is a very famous short. Well, if you read, I don't know if schools still do, but Flannery O'Connor was a very well-known American writer who died at a very young age. I think she wasn't even 30 when she died, but she was famous for her short stories, Southern Gothic tales, like A Good Man is Hard to Find. The last season of Lost had like a shot of Jacob, the main good guy character, reading a book of hers. Well, it was a collection of her short stories. And the book was Everything That Rises Must Converge. So she also wrote a couple of novels. Wise Blood was made into a movie by John Huston, starring Brad Dourif. But anyway, what I did not know, we know she was a very well-known short story writer. What I didn't know was that she was also a cartoonist. And apparently Fantagraphics has collected all of her cartoon work that was done at a certain point of her life, probably before her short story career took off, and they were releasing a collection of it. Because I'm from the South, and because I actually did grow up reading, you know, her stories, and they're really good and ahead of their time. She's like a female Edgar Allan Poe. Really good stories, just not horror kind of stuff, but just the evil that people do. And these false, you know, religious people and stuff like that in this rural South. It's just really interesting stuff. So I'm picking up this book. And then you have Meta Mouse by Pantheon. And what this is there's a book called Mouse, M-A-U-S, mm-hmm. by Art Spiegelman. Mm-hmm. And it's a very famous, well-known book, you know, mm-hmm. where Art wrote the Jewish people in the Holocaust as mice mm-hmm. and the Nazis as cats. And created like animal, you know, other people as pigs and stuff like that. And kind of very interesting cartoon look at, you know, the Holocaust and stuff. And it's the story of Art's father, mm-hmm. how he got out of Germany and how he had to serve some time in a concentration camp and thankfully escaped. So this book, Meta Mouse, is kind of like a look into the mind of Art Spiegelman, how he came up with the story, the process that came up with it. It's kind of interesting. Art Spiegelman is a very interesting person. He's one of those guys, you know, that helped kind of make the idea, him, guys like Harvey Pekar, where comics weren't just about superhero and tights and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There is worth to comics. It doesn't have to be sleazy stuff, but, you know, there is worth to it that's outside of the norm. Mm-hmm. And then finally, last thing I'll mention is Lord of the Jungle by Dynamite. Dynamite has a couple of licenses they got. They have Lord of the Jungle being written by Arvid Nelson, and then they also have Voltron, which I mentioned last week. So both of these books come with a ton of covers. Mm-hmm. At least four regular ones, and probably, you know, at least as many incentives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually got ringing excited about the issue 2 of Bionic Man, because I got the one with the cover that I wanted.
Mm.
And I didn't even request the cover that I wanted. I got the one of the Bionic Man in his red tracksuit running, and it's all like, it was very, very, very reminiscent of the TV series. Yeah. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. Nice. Well, let me throw in one thing before we get off of the previews. There's one other thing I think deserves mentioning. I am a huge fan of Kickstart comics. There's a book called Danger Academy that's coming out. It's $8.99. They're usually smaller than regular comics, but they're usually very self-contained stories. You don't see any continuations. They've never done that. And this is written by Tony Lee and drawn by Dan Boltwood, I believe. And let me read the description real quickly. It's Spychester Academy for Gifted Teens. That sounds kind of familiar. The secret private school where the children of super spies go to be safe, but when their parents go missing, only these children can save them. So that sounds kind of interesting. It reminds me a little bit of Gladstone's School for World Conquerors and a little Teen Titans, little X-Men, but from a different perspective. So I'm looking forward to that book. I want to throw that in there. Danger Academy.
Yeah, it sounds like Spy Kids a little bit.
Okay, how about we get into previews? Ian, you got any previews, things that are coming that you want to talk about?
Well, no comics book previews, but I can preview Thought Bubble, which is taking place in Leeds next month.
Okay.
Nice.
Well, one of the big guests of interest that'll be probably of interest to us, really, is Jeff Lemire.
Woohoo! Animal Man.
There's Frankenstein Agent of Shade as well. I've also got an artist there called Cameron Stewart. I think you might have heard of him. He's like a drawing of Batman.
Oh, I haven't seen many bad drawings of Batman, so that's good.
Lee Garbett, I think it's Garbett, G-A-R-B-E-T-T.
Mm-hmm.
Got a big picture of Wonder Woman. Adam Hughes.
Oh, boy.
Time Bomb Comics will be there, who did the Dick Turpin comic.
Yeah. I was wondering about Dick Turpin. He's not in this new strip magazine.
No, he's a law unto himself, is our Dick.
Truer words were never said.
Gary Erskine's there.
Oh, I know him.
And Barry Kitson.
Okay.
Neil Roberts. Ray McMahon. Lee Carter, 2000 AD. Cy Detan's going to be there.
Oh, good.
Our favourite people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I really want to try and get to this one. I love Cy Detan. I think he's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
I meant love in a manly way, in a manly, non-homosexual way, right?
Oh, okay. As long as you're sure.
All right.
Dave Gibbons is going to be there.
Mm, good.
Along with Tolkien.
Oh, cool. I like him.
Brian Tolbert's going to be there.
Oh, very good.
Again.
Oh, boy.
Paul Cornell.
Oh, boy.
Rob Williams. Mm-hmm. Sean Phillips. Duncan Fegrado.
I like Sean Phillips a lot.
He does Hellboy, I think. Kieran Gingham, Andy Diggle.
Oh, good. Good writer.
Those are just sort of like the names that I've run off that I think you both know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we read all of them, we'd be here all night. But the actual convention takes place over the weekend starting the 19th of November.
Cool.
But the big convention, as in the comics hall, is going to be open on the 20th and the 21st, which is where all the dealers will be there selling the comics and stuff.
Cool.
It's a good event. It's worth attending. So, again, if you're a UK listener, get your butts down to Thought Bubble.
Okay.
Tickets at thoughtbubblefestival.com.
Okay. Okay, John, how about you? What previews you got for this coming week?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of DC ladies going, a couple of Bat ladies going on sale next week.
Mm-hmm.
Batgirl number 2, mm-hmm. as well as the third printing of number 1.
Wow.
and Batwoman number 2, as well as its second printing of number 1, comes out. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. Batwoman, I know you love Batgirl probably more, but I like Batwoman mm-hmm. simply because of J.H. Williams III's mm-hmm. art. There's Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, number 2, comes out, mm-hmm. as well as its second printing of number 1. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's Blue Estate number 6 from Image Comics.
Yay.
did someone say something?
I did. I said yay.
Yay. Yeah. So definitely that. And then one other book that's interesting, it's a little pricey, but it's Bloom County's Volume 5 from IDW, hardcover book. It's the final book chapter, you know, in Bloom County. It covers from, like, I believe late 1987 to 1989, the final strips of the book. So if you're a fan of that, if anyone's under 30 years old, you probably don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But anyway, it's really fun. They spoofed Donald Trump even back then. You know, I remember. But it's really interesting. So
cool.
That is it for me.
All right. Let me hit a couple of others just because I think they deserve mentioning. American Vampire Survival of the Fittest, number 5 of 5, is coming out from the aforementioned Mr. Snyder. Batman and Robin 1 and 2, the second printing of number 1, is out. Arkham City Hardcover, the collection of that miniseries by Paul Dini, is coming out. Deathstroke number 1, second printing. Deathstroke number 2. Mr. Cornell's Demon Knights number 1 and Demon Knights number 2. Mr. Lemire's Frankenstein Agent of Shade numbers 1 and 2.
Can't wait
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, yeah. Green Lantern number 1, second printing. Green Lantern number 2. Grifters 1 and 2. I think people ought to get that pattern by now. Legion Lost 1 and 2. Mr. Terrific 1 and 2. Resurrection Man, which a lot of people really liked, so I'm happy to hear about that. Numbers 1 and 2. Shade number 1, which is a beginning of a year-long miniseries. It's 1 of 12 coming out from DC. It's a one of the number ones. Suicide Squad, Ian, you're going to be happy to hear about that. Numbers 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. Superboy 1 and 2. And Alpha Flight number 5, which is doing well for Marvel. So very surprising. That's actually an ongoing series now, which is kind of cool for them. Yeah, Chippendale Rescue Rangers trade paperback. I love that cartoon series. They've been putting out those from Boom until Marvel gets it. I guess we can still buy from Boom. And I got to mention, Dream Reavers number 1 of 4 is coming out. I interviewed the gentleman behind that. Very interesting book where a bunch of teenagers from around the world enter a dreamscape and gain powers when they go in there. And they have some very interesting stuff. If you can get Dream Reavers number 1, I highly recommend. It's only a 4-issue miniseries. One last thing for Atlas, a shout out for Grim Ghost number 5 and Phoenix number 5 are out this week as well. So very good stuff out this week. As always, a nice good week to run to the comic store.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to pay homage to Chip and Dale, are you ready, Wayne? On 3, 1, 2, 3. Chip and Dale, the Rescue Rangers.
Yeah. So I like that music. I can't sing it because I just butcher it when I do that.
Yeah.
I just did butcher it. There you go.
Well, see, I'd rather you butcher it than me butcher it, so that's fine by me.
If you want to mention, like, you know, you mentioned the Disney stuff. I know they have DuckTales number 5 coming out next week, and kind of depressing because you're seeing, like, the crossover with Darkwing Duck, and these are, like, the final issues, basically.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think this is the final month. And then, yeah, the same thing with the Stan Lee books, too. Mm-hmm. I think Starborn, one of the last trades, comes out, and some of the other books are reaching their conclusion. Oh, and you know, another thing I forgot to mention is that in the previews, they're doing a crossover now with Irredeemable Incorruptible.
Yes.
They're also now doing, like, these first issues, black and white editions, kind of taking the thing that IDW did. And they're selling it for a regular price, the first issues of both series, in a black and white, all black and white edition. I just have a weird feeling that these books are coming to a conclusion. I don't want it to be true. Mm-hmm. Stuff like this kind of points me towards that direction. Okay, because that's how they ended, like, their last series with the Stan Lee books, and that's how they're ending their Disney books with these crossovers. Now you're having it with these two books, you know. I wonder if Mark Waid is putting an end to these titles. I hope not. I hope I'm wrong.
Me too, but, you know, it's this is about how long these books usually last before they start to fizzle out. So, I mean, yeah. We'll see. Mr. Waid has good stories in there, so I'll buy them as long as he wants to put them out, and they're good.
Yeah. I mean, it's lasted so far up to, like, I think it's in the 30s right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, number 30's coming out.
The Stan Lee books only lasted, like, 12 issues.
Right.
So, like, a year.
Yeah, well, Matt Waid beat Stan Lee, so that's cool.
Mark.
Yeah.
Well, he's, Mark Waid's a lot younger, so he can do those sorts of things. But let me just mention two others quick before we close up. Vic Boone, number two, one of my very favorite comics out there by Sean Aldridge. It's very good. The issue, the printed issue number two is coming. I'm going to review issue number three in an upcoming Comics Portal column because I got a PDF from him. And for those people who want more Warehouse 13 now that the series has gone off the air, Warehouse 13 number two is going to be out the comics. So something to buy.
Woohoo.
Okay, thanks, guys. We'll be back next week.
Crazy Joe.
This is Dave, host of Megapodzilla,
the podcast equivalent to a 100-foot radioactive robot lizard,
but with horn-rimmed glasses and a pocket protector.
That's nerdy. We're on the rampage, laying waste to the geek landscape.
We'll talk movies, TV, comics, toys, video games.
And sometimes we talk turkey.
Don't you mean chicken?
That's right. So check us out at Megapodzilla.com.
We're also available on iTunes and the Zune Marketplace.
Aw, yeah.
Okay, let's take a look and see what's come into your local comic store this week. There's a very interesting bust from The Dark Knight. It's The Dark Knight Returns, the Joker full-size bust. Joker's not in Dark Knight Returns, so I'm not exactly sure. It's definitely a great-looking bust. It's got the dreaded PI, which means it may be more expensive than some of us can afford. There's also the Amazing Spider-Man Origin Story Year hardcover for $8.99. There are a bunch of Angry Birds figurines and Angry Birds of Prey t-shirt. There's Aqua Units Patrol Squad DVD, and I'm sure Mr. Malero would be happy if we'd buy that. There's a Batman Mighty Wallet for $15. There's a Batman Whiteout White t-shirt. There's also a Betty Boop Route 66 Wacky Wobbler. Those Wacky Wobblers keep wobbling. There's a Captain America Captain Shield t-shirt. There are Disney Traditions Elf Donald with Cookies and Milk. A Hanging Tinkerbell with Bass. St. Mick Pluto the Reindeer. And Tinkerbell Poinsettia Tree. I guess we're getting ready for Christmas already. Doctor Who stuff includes a 36-piece mini figure set. There's also Doctor Who Series 6 action figure wave, number 2, Doctor Who Talons of Wang Chang DVD, then we get the Dracula Stairs t-shirt, Ghostbusters Stay Puffed Inflatable, G.I. Joe action figures, there's also a Green Lantern Mighty Wallet, a Green Lantern Movie Deluxe Light Up Costume for Halloween, then we get to see How to Draw a Manga Library DVD for only $39.95. There's also Marvel Hero Clicks giant-sized X-Men with Apocalypse, another one with Sentinel Mark II, another one with Sentinel Mark V. There's also the Marvel Minimates Curse of the Mutants box set, Marvel Outside Print Wallet, a Marvel Trolley Case, Marvel Universe action figures, and then there's also Mighty Thor Origins Story of the Year hardcover. Also a Mortal Kombat t-shirt, Munchkins Jumbo D6 set blue, green, orange, purple, red, and yellow. There's Monsters Family Hot Rod, a t-shirt. There's also Pop Ad Icons Booberry vinyl figure, Count Chocula vinyl figure, Frankenberry vinyl figure. There's also a Sanctuary Season 3 DVD and Blu-ray. Smallville role-playing game for the high school yearbook is out. There's also Star Trek Fleet Captain's Miniatures game, and the beloved Star Trek Pizza Cutter shows up this week. There's also Star Trek Vault 40 Years from the Archives hardcover. There's Star Wars Starfighter Vehicle and the Ultimate FX Lightsaber. Superman gets his own Mighty Wallet. There's Superman Pop Art t-shirt. There's also Star Wars The Clone Wars Clone Trooper stand-up and a Jawa costume. Then we get to the Flash Mighty Wallet. Lots of Mighty Wallets this week. There's also Twilight Zone 8-inch figures. That'll be fascinating. And of course, we got to end with the zombies, so there's Walking Dead bunch of figures just came out, as well as just a zombie costume with a t-shirt that's white. There's also a zombie shelter sign, a zombies in 200 kilometers sign, and zombies for $25. And those are the wonderful things that came in the comic shop this week. And
that draws to a close the 30th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. If you'd like to help Ian, Cullen, and me defray our costs, please go to the scifipulse.net website. That's SCIFIPULSE.net website, and you'll see a place in the upper right-hand corner where you can make a donation to help us pay for our expenses. And we'd really appreciate any amount. There's nothing too small or too big, so please feel free to help out if you can. Next week, I'm going to be speaking with Matt Malero, who's well known for bringing Aqua Teen Hunger Force to Cartoon Network on the Adult Swim. He's got a book coming out from Kickstart, one of my very favorite companies, and it's called Nobodies with a silent K at the beginning. That's coming out by the end of the month, and I think you'll enjoy my talk with him. That's coming next week. So until next time, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.